this like commandment that you love one another as I have loved you. And what has greater love than this? To lay down one's life for one's friends. Well, I may in the future be asked to proclaim the gospel to a gathering of strangers. Never again will I have the privilege of preaching in the midst of a community that I have known and has known me, for better or worse, for richer or poorer, in sickness and in health, for almost a quarter of a century. As I anticipated this day at the end of our life together, I kept returning to the scene in the book of Acts, where Paul gives a tearful farewell to the elders from the church in Ephesus. What I love about this scene is the combination of honest grief and good theology. Before they weep and embrace, the apostle proclaims the gospel one last time through the lens of his ministry with them and among them. I intend to do the same this morning. Paul begins by acknowledging his rough start in Ephesus, marked by humility, tears, and trials. God knows the trials that humbled me and brought me to tears in this place, particularly in those first few years. I learned pretty much everything the hard way. Your patience and support, your critique and wisdom, bowed me down and raised me up over and over again. And here is my point, and I think Paul's. A point having to do with the humanity of the church and its ministry. In the beginning, when I turned out not to be the minister some of you had in mind, and to tell you the truth, when you turned out not to be like the congregation I had loved for you, some of whom are here today, the words of Dietrich Bonhoeffer in Life Together chastened me. And I just might chasten all of you going forward. He wrote, "The one who loves her dream of a community more than the Christian community itself becomes a destroyer of the latter, even though that one's personal intentions may be ever so honest and earnest and sacrificial." But how exactly do you love the church you have been given with all of its faults and shortcomings? When I arrived on the hill, a former student of mine at the College of Worcester, Ellie Stratton, who was your interim associate minister, gave me some counsel, and her counsel to me was to love you so that you might grow to love one another more. Counsel that tracked with my favorite sentence in our Book of Mormon. Organization rests on fellowship and is designed not to work without trust and love. But how? We enter into the common life, Bonhoeffer goes on to say, not as demanders, but as thankful recipients. Gratitude was my first step toward loving the church God had given me. Hear that as my first parting word to you. Never cease to be grateful for the church God has given you in this place, on the avenue, in all its humility. Next, Paul goes on to remind the Ephesians how he did not shrink from doing anything helpful. Proclaiming the message to them and teaching them publicly and from house to house. Sometimes what a minister thinks is helpful is not so much. If you read Luke's account, through preaching and teaching and pastoral care, we testify to the good news of God's grace in the midst of the congregation. The question over the years has sent me to, you want to guess who? Sent me to Karl Barth's answer in a lecture on the task of ministry. Why do they come to us, he asks, when they must long since have made the discovery that they cannot expect the same service from us as they do from an attorney or a dentist, for instance? A decade of ministry serving a small blue-collar congregation in Solothurn, Switzerland, led this theological giant of the 20th century to say, it is evident that they do not need us to help them live, but seem rather to need us to help them die. For their whole life is lived in the shadow of death. To paraphrase Mark, the reason you come to us, strange that they seem, for wisdom, for help, is because you know the whole network of your life is hung upon a thread like gossamer. You suddenly wake to a realization that you are walking on a ridge between time and eternity that is narrower than a knife. I like to imagine that helping Eunicus return to life from death changed Paul's understanding of the help his proclamation of the gospel had to give that day. And every day after. But I also imagine the fall of Eunicus changed the openness and vulnerability of the congregation to hearing the gospel. The only help I had to give the morning I first preached in this pulpit as a candidate was a word anchored in the refrain, "Abide with me." Help of the helpless. Help of the helpless. Lord, abide with me. Days before Randy Harris, a teacher of this church's youth, had fallen down the flight of stairs. Had not been revived. Since that Sunday, death has stalked those of us we have loved close at hand, has stalked the nation as the towers fell, and has stalked the city with countless lives remembered too often on our front lawn. But more than death itself, death dealers have caused us to order our lives by fear more than hope. To live in fear is to live in the shadow of death. The hope I have for you on that first day is the same hope I have for you on the last. It is simply the assurance, all evidence to the contrary, that love has triumphed over death. Put another way, love and not the grave is the destination of every child of God ever born. Put another way, love is stronger than death. They say a minister has one sermon in her. I guess they have one. And the metaphor is this: because love is stronger than death, you may dare to fight the dragons of darkness with confidence, with the confidence of those who belong in life and in death to the almighty, powerless love revealed in the manger and on the cross. My second parting word: be of good courage. And Paul instructs the elders to keep watch overseers to shepherd the church of God. Holy, keep watch. Paul is concerned about the forces that will try to lure the Ephesians away from the gospel. Clearly the same voices that have tried to have them while Paul was with them. What voices were I worrying about going forward? Voices that have nipped at the church's heels ever since we met. Maybe it would be the voices so concerned over the church's survival that they urge you to go slow. Shallow in the church's witness, so as not to be prophetic. Shallow in the church's music and worship, so as merely to be entertaining. Shallow in the church's preaching and teaching, so as not to be substantive. Put out in the deep and let your nets down for a catch, Jesus once said to Simon. I take that to mean disciples are made when the church plumbs the depths of its theological and biblical tradition in the service of its witness to God's reign breaking in even now. I also take it to mean that keeping watch over the flock does not mean keeping the church safe, but keeping the church faithful. If we lose a generation of young people in the church, it won't be because we didn't entertain them, Shane Claiborne writes. It will be because we did not dare them to do something meaningful with the gospel in the light of the world we live in. Let the Franciscans pray. May God bless you with discomfort and easy answers, half-truths, and superficial relationships, so that you may live deep within your heart. May God bless you with anger. Anger at injustice, oppression, and exploitation of people, so that you may work for justice, freedom, and peace. May God bless you with tears, to shed for those who suffer pain, rejection, hunger, and want, and more, so that you may reach out your hand to comfort them and to turn their pain to joy. And may God bless you with enough foolishness to believe that you can make a difference in the world, so that you can do what others claim cannot be done, to bring justice and kindness to all God's children and the poor. The church is called to undertake this task, to undertake this mission, says our reporter, even at the risk of losing its life. A third parting word, continue to dare the depths for Christ's sake, for the sake of the world God has so loved. I see all of you, some of you are in a deep sleep already, so this is almost coming to a close, but I'm just going to lash out at you, so. stick to. One day the phone rang, and his home was in Vermont. The caller was an acquaintance, a minister who lived in Charlotte, asking about how he was. I assumed, Peter wrote, he was calling from home. And now, he was 20 minutes away. He thought maybe it might be of some help to have an extra friend around for a day or two. And had not called in advance lest he be told he was crazy to go to the trouble. So he just showed up. I don't think anything we found to say to each other amounted to very much, Victor writes. There was nothing particularly religious about it. We took a couple of walks, had a meal or two together, smoked our pipes. That was about it. To commend you to God, and the message of God's grace not at the end as we part, and simply to give you into each other's care. It means giving you to be God's mere embrace to every vulnerable other, unexpected, uninvited, unasked for, freely given. And last word, love one another as you have loved me and I you, because we have first been loved by God in Christ. When he finished speaking, he knelt down with them all and prayed. There was much weeping among them all. They embraced and kissed and grieved. Then they brought him to the ship. Thanks be to God for the incomparable gift of each and every one of you and the gift of this beloved church that is my heart.